Attention market research and insights pros. Don't miss IIEX Europe 2024, June 25th and 26th in Amsterdam. Grab your tickets fast. It's looking like a sellout event. Hear from industry leaders at Diageo, Mondelez, Nestle, and more. Network, discover critical trends, and discover advanced tools and tactics to meet your business goals. Use the code PODCAST for 20% off. Register now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Green Book Podcast. I'm excited to be hosting today. It's Karen Lynch. And today, my guest is actually somebody I have had the privilege of meeting before at our APAC event not that long ago in Bangkok. I'm talking to Rasika Mathur from Snapdeal. Rasika, before we even begin, welcome to the Green Book Podcast.
Thank you, Karen. And such a pleasure to see you again, to meet you and have this conversation with you tonight.
Ditto. I feel the exact same way. So for those of you who have not met Rasika or know of her, she's a senior director and head of consumer insights at Snapdeal. So Rasika, let's just level set by getting right into, you know, who Snapdeal is, because much of our audience is in the US and we may not be familiar with the platform, which is in the world of e-commerce. So tell us about Snapdeal and then your role specifically.
Sure, Karen. Snapdeal is India's one of the leading value e-commerce platform. We've been here in the market for some time. We've undergone a lot of business transformation pivots. And we've here now established ourselves as a value e-commerce, looking at how diverse the opportunity, the demographics of our country are, and the opportunity that we have to position ourselves as an e-commerce platform.
And your role then specifically within the organization, tell us about that.
So currently I am heading the consumer insights team, Karen. But for me, I take great pride that, you know, my experience in the company spans over 14 years now. So I am more of a business person who has transitioned to a consumer research role in the last 6 years odd. So my understanding of the whole, the consumer and the business is from the background that I have been part of the various business functions working at the core of it. So, you know, setting up processes, understanding how they work in depth, and then learning about in depth about how consumers are and, you know, how listening to them can actually be a game changer for each vertical in the business is what really excites me in my role currently.
I think I read in one of your bios that you work towards the customer obsession culture. And I loved that phrase, customer obsession. Can you talk to me just a little bit about that? By leading this team, that's what you're doing.
So one of the core values that, for us has been very critical has been the customer obsession culture. So while we have, right from start, we've had various ways of listening to the consumers, looking, listening through social media, the various channels that we have out there. But we have constantly been making a conscious effort to understanding and listening to what consumers have to say, what they think, what they feel. And that has been like a foundation of how our business has evolved. So customer obsession is a culture and it's a part of the company core value that we here as a team lead. It's not just about what we do as a function. It's about how our learnings get translated to various actionables across the business verticals.
That's great. And I love the fact that you have this history with the organization. I mean, if you've been there 14 years, you've been there since the founding or shortly thereafter. I love that you're informing lots of different areas of the business.
Absolutely, Karen. And that has actually given me a huge context in which we operate. So I've been part of the marketing team, the supply chain, the communication, some part of the HR culture piece as well. And that has given a good context to understand so what consumers say and how that translates to doing something about it in the business scenario is what I've been able to bring to the table through that experience.
That's great. And probably the most important thing for an insights professional is to make sure the insights gathered are actionable and then literally acted upon because they are actionable. So kudos to you. You know, I'm really excited to dig into the topic, for reasons that will become clear. It's a very interesting topic and you have some interesting ways of talking about it. But when I say the topic, we're going back in time now to our APAC event, our Asia Pacific event, for those of you who aren't familiar with our global event series. And I was privileged to have worked with you on this interview that we published ahead of time, which we'll put into the show notes, and then see you on stage. Tell me more about consumer emotions as a catalyst to business growth as a topic, and then we'll dig into all the little nuances because it's a fascinating space.
So in today's fast-paced lives, we're always hard-pressed for time, energy, money, and often, more often than not, we are pressed to make decisions in the spur of the moment. And often these decisions, we've realized over time, are less to do with the information that one has at that point in time, but more about, you know, the instincts, the subconscious emotions, you know, the programming that we've grown up with over years. And that is what finally leads to the action that one takes. So at a time when, you know, attention is fleeting, choices are abundant, understanding these emotions actually play a very key role for a business to understand what the person is looking for and what those decisions are. So, you know, especially for us, you know, in the digital commerce world, the best decision a customer takes is the decision that he takes right now. So there is a lot of gap between what I would ideally say I would like to do and make a purchase about, but finally what I end up doing. So that's what this, the say-do gap, as we all know about this term, is what to a great extent the emotion, understanding these core emotions have enabled us to bridge and figure out really what's happening behind the screen.
And it's not just the singular purchase decision, right? These emotions, from your point of view, are affecting customer loyalty, affecting retention, repeat purchase. So what can you tell us about how emotions affect the bigger journey?
So how we see it, a purchase journey is actually not a series of transactions that a customer makes. It's a series of experiences that a customer feels and, you know, feels a part of at every different stage. So while one may be able to identify the right product, have the right price point that fits his pocket, but, you know, what really gets a consumer back to your shop, to your platform, is how we made him feel right till the point after the product was also received by him. So, you know, it's the understanding, it's the connect. And actually, we believe that delivering the right product, the right quality at the right point is the starting of a relationship. The emotional connect is what defines how quickly and how frequently the person will come back to you to shop again.
That's an excellent perspective, actually, to think about the entire experience, which is broader than the entire journey, which a lot of people in our industry do talk about customer journey. But, you know, we're slower. We're getting closer to understanding, you know, the world of the customer experience, because insights is often just one part of the entire customer experience. So you talk about customer service, you talk about follow-up, if there's any troubleshooting that needs to happen, the usability of the platform, it all factors in, right? So I'm Absolutely. Sure in e-commerce specifically, you're seeing all of that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, emotions actually go down to the depth of once the person receives the product. So often, say in the beauty segment, there are often products, and especially if you want to buy good brands, you know, when the package actually comes to the doorstep and you're, you know, supposed to give your card and say, oh, and you know, oh, $1,000 of makeup stuff that you've actually bought. But at the same time, the brand understands that emotion and they will send you freebies. Some things that you probably may not have really had the, you know, the mind to go and explore that as well. But they'll give you minis of the various product samples. And immediately your mind changes from the fact that, oh, I've paid so much, to the fact, oh, I have freebies. So, you know, these little tweaks actually change the whole experience.
It's so interesting because I just had an experience with a beauty product within the last few weeks where something arrived damaged. There's nothing worse than, you know, a damaged cake of makeup or I think this was a blush. Anyway, and had forgotten that I had, you know, kind of registered my complaint online. And yesterday I received a package and it was a new one. And I was surprised again. I was sort of delighted. I'm like, oh, look, as if it was brand new, because I had forgotten because it was a busy week last week. So anyway, it's interesting to think about it, that, you know, the opening of the package in your own space being a part of the journey and the experience as well. So I want to segue into personalization, because that factors into a lot of e-commerce trends right now, this trend towards greater personalization and product recommendations happening and the algorithms having influence. But when we layer in emotional intelligence, that changes things a bit. So I'd love your perspective on that, because that's a new way of looking at this.
For us, personalization is not just about, and by us, I mean people in the consumer research fraternity and how in the digital space we look at, it's not just about recommending the right product or more similar products to a customer. It's also about being able to create a legacy of narratives, understanding what the priorities are. So you will probably have a similar line of messaging, the language, the visual surrounding, the context in which the consumer actually sees the product. And there is like a series of cues that are meant to take the, so you understand the priority of a particular cohort of customers that we met, for instance, if you're talking about. And this will be, personalization will be about guiding the consumer through their current emotional state to what the perceived emotional state is when the person anticipates when his need will be fulfilled. So personalization is actually helping him transition from what he is in the moment to what he would like to feel once that transaction has completed.
So one of the questions that I have about all of this as I'm thinking is, okay, you know, going to the, how do you achieve this? How do you get that emotional understanding of all of the different states throughout, you know, not just the experience, but also the personalized experience? What are some specifics about methodologies you're using? Because we've talked a bit about data and how data is often unemotional.
Yeah, absolutely. So over a period of time, we've seen certain trends that get reflected across different cohorts. So, you know, the younger population will have certain values, certain emotions very core to them. So, for instance, if we talk about the younger lot, they are very aspirational in nature. They would like to believe that they wear only brands, for instance. And whether or not their pocket allows them, but they want to believe that they usually wear the high-profile branded clothing only. So when you understand that, and you understand that there is a cohort that really believes and feels like that, so all the assortment that you have, and you kind of have it in a mix of the brand, the middle segment brand, the value segment brands, the guy realizes that, you know, a style and a design which is similar to what these big luxurious brands have to offer, I'm getting it at a better price. So he associates the same value with a better assortment that fits his pocket, which fits his budget. And that's when you kind of guide him to it. So it's not about changing what the person desires, but being able to meet where and how he can afford that. So, you know, just understanding this, you kind of meet them in the middle and offer them what they are looking at, but at a value price that they can afford to have a part of their living.
It's a great example. And so in my head, I'm thinking, so it's not that you're doing something specific to understand emotions and shopping data concurrently. You're really connecting threads between what the data is showing you and what you are learning about their values. And that must cross many methods of research. Am I right?
Absolutely, Karen. In fact, we've tried to understand how one could do that through technology, you know, to make it a very automated part of it. But somewhere down the line, and I think as researchers, there is a big human element that you bring to this whole circle. And it's not about just training the AI to, you know, pop up results after you've given it enough inputs. But it's also about being able to constantly join these dots as you interact, you talk to more people, you see how the demand changes, what is it that, you know, people are asking for, and what they actually end up buying.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that you've talked about is the idea of being influential, right? And feeding into personalization by knowing who the consumers are. But is there a strategy that you use personally to help kind of map out all of these data points that you have, whether it's an emotional data point or a literal shopper data point? Are there strategies that you personally use to help pull the whole picture together, whether it's mapping or some other way of understanding the bigger picture?
So I wouldn't really call it like a formed strategy or a process that we've taken into account. But yes, we are constantly listening. We are constantly listening what data is talking, how the business is performing, what people are saying on different channels, what is their expectation, what is their perception. And when we do these interactions and we have conversations with people, we have certain hypotheses that we've developed basis, you know, the external inputs that we've received. And these hypotheses get validated, or we get cues to go deeper into them to identify exactly what will work. And that's how we kind of arrive at a strategy as such. So there is no like a thumb rule that this is the process that we will follow. But yes, we are listening. We've worked on skills. We've, you know, evolved our teams to constantly learn, gauge, unlearn, learn new strategies and skills to be able to learn and read between the lines of what you hear and finally what the data is saying.
Can you give words of wisdom or practical advice to other certain areas of companies to integrate some of these insights? You know, I know you shared the idea of what you can offer for, you know, a certain type of consumer, but are there other steps businesses can take to integrate some of your emotional insights that you're sharing?
So I think this is actually a very business-focused approach that one may have, but I think a lot of companies or businesses would really, so, you know, at the end of the day, everybody is looking at building a profitable business. You know, consumer learnings and consumer insights happen to be one of the ways to get the customer back to you. As somebody who has seen both the sides of being in the business and seeing how consumers respond, I think it's very important to be authentic in trying to achieve and trying to deliver what you promise to deliver in terms of, you know, the values that you as a business, as a brand, you have set for yourself. And making sure that consumers are actually understanding and being able to live the promises that you have delivered to them. So I think that it cannot be profitability and hence listen to what people are saying. It rather has to be listen to what people are saying, build your business accordingly, and then profits are an obvious outcome for, you know, if people feel happy at the core of it, people want to go to shop from any place that where they trust, where they feel happy, where they feel that, you know, the right things will be given to them. They won't be cheated. Their values will be respected for. And I think once that happens, everything else falls in place.
When you say authenticity, in my head, I'm thinking, how does that translate to an e-commerce site? What is an e-commerce company that could be perceived as not human, right? Because there's no cashiers standing there or people on the floor helping you out. How does that authenticity play out in a digital e-commerce ecosystem?
So I'll share with you an example. Now let's take, you know, one of the, you know, a business segment, say the housewives who are shopping very frequently in the online space. Now over time, one understands that housewives, while they are the nurturers and they take care of the family needs and they are shopping for everybody in the family, they are often the people who don't end up thinking about themselves. So there is a lot of monotony. They are looking out for validation. If they are wanting to buy, you know, a new dress for themselves, they would wait for the children to come back from school and tell them and give their advice. Oh, how will this dress look on me? So, you know, at the time when she is, you know, maximizing her time and the boredom to see what is there online, and online shopping is an escape for her, that's an emotion that, you know, exists. Now, a good business practice would try to help and give her validation to make her feel good that, you know, you are important. And here are some offers that, you know, you can avail if you do shopping, buy one, get one, whatever, you know, the business dynamics work well for. So that is being authentic, that you understand that she's looking for validation. She's living a monotonous, phase of the day at that time, and she's looking for somebody who can respect those emotions. Now, at the same time, a bad business practice can actually play around with those emotions and maybe just ride her to, you know, certain set of products or give really bad collection, you know, like some product which have actually been discarded by the brand, and you create a positioning that, you know, you will get something for only 7 rupees in this limited window. So a housewife will jump in for those kind of offers because there is this thrill of that I did something good and I was able to save more for my family. But if, you know, a bad business practice would want to actually exploit this emotion and just give whatever can sell at that point in time. So that's the differentiation. And today's consumers are smart enough. They are modern consumers. They are well-educated. They are smart enough to understand what is real and what is fake. You know, and then there is no coming back from there.
Once you've hurt that relationship, so to speak, by not understanding who they are, that's something that you can't recover from. And as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, that's, you know, the understanding of those emotional need states are really key to what you're talking about. Do you have many, many personas that you have sought to understand of all different types of shoppers, you know, across the ecosystem? Because I imagine a housewife, a woman in that particular need state is just one of many.
Yeah, absolutely. So we keep evolving our understanding as to, you know, what are the different sets of consumers in the online world. And it's not just about what our business caters to, but there is a whole big wide world that has opened to online shopping, especially post-COVID. So there are a lot of first timers. There are a lot of people who have been shopping online or have been making online payments. But for them, online shopping is a whole new big world. So there is a constant. So while we have figured, who and what are the different cohorts that come often and what is the level of engagement and how they do. But this is a constantly, evolving field. And this is what probably was in the last 6 months. And what the next 6 months is going to be another level of evolution.
I love that perspective because I think a lot of organizations consider their work on personas and segmentation done. And then they say, there, we've done our segmentation. We know who our shoppers are. So I love the idea that who's shopping for you today may not be the same people that were shopping for you 6 months ago, that you think you fully understand, that you have to continually understand who might be coming in to your audience.
And the context is not just about what we do as an online platform, but the environment is changing. You know, there are small businesses coming up. Everybody has, new context to either build a business or to set up business or to make their lives more efficient and better. And even the people today are finding various ways on how they can optimize. I remember talking to, so like in India, there is like a, it's also like a new business in the last 1 year that they give delivery of products within 7-8 minutes. So it's an app, you pick up things that you want and they deliver to your doorstep within 7-8 minutes. This is a service that you have to pay a fee for it. So usually this was meant to be for people who live in larger communities or, you know, who have a higher standard of living. And the other day I was talking to a customer who happened to be, he was an online shopper shopping for like 3-4 years now. And he has a shop in one of the streets in Mumbai. I was talking to him and we were trying to, you know, ask his perspective on a business statement. And he says, ma'am, can you give me a second? I need to order biscuits through this particular app for my child. And I was surprised that this pack of biscuits is just for 10 rupees and you're going to pay more than the price of the biscuits to actually have it delivered to your doorstep. He said, yes, I'm at the peak of my business hour. I cannot leave my shop and go.
Right.
But I'll be better at what I do if I'm able to have this delivered to the child who's just come back from school and is really cranky because he wants to have these biscuits before. So my wife cannot go out. We have a younger child, younger baby, so she can't go out. So I may be spending a little more, but at least there is peace of mind and I will be more efficient in how my whole household is functioning. And I was like, wow.
Yeah, highly, highly relatable example to anyone who has ever balanced work and parenting at the same time. Or, and when I say parenting, pets count, because I can't tell you how often I wish there would be somebody who would just show up at the snap of my fingers to walk my dog for me when my, you know, like there, like there are things that if they're going to get in the way of your workday, that makes perfect sense to me. So
yeah,
that's a moment to understand for sure. And an emotional need in a moment and delivering against that. So fascinating. You know, another question I have for you, and this was something that I hadn't really thought about till I read it in our brief, actually, this idea about visual cues and how heavily e-commerce relies on visual cues to drive purchase. And yet emotional awareness of somebody's mind state may not be necessarily going hand in hand with the visual cues. So it just seemed to be a puzzle that I'd love to get your thoughts on, is how do you balance understanding what's going on with somebody's emotional need state and the visual cues that are already at the ready for you to provide? Are there strategies that you put in place?
Actually, yes. It's a little broader in context as to how a business can provide that. But definitely, so actually one of the biggest challenges what a digital company has is not being able to see the consumer at the time that he is on your platform. So, you know, while in the retail segment, you can see, you have queues, you have, these aromas and, the freshly brewed coffee that kind of just calms you down and, makes you happy, and the lighting, the soft music kind of settle you down, and they, in subtle ways try and get you ready for a shopping moment so that you're able to spend money and choose a product and maybe spend some more. However, in digital commerce, we really don't know what's happening on the other side of the screen. What emotional state somebody is in, what is it that they are feeling, what kind of a day they've had. But at the same time, one understands what time of the day is the person coming more often. And, what kind of products is he looking at when he is looking and, coming at that point in time. So the different communication strategies in terms of the visual cues that you have, on the platform, the kind of the offers that you bring, the way you talk to him about what is important for him at that point in time. I think these are various ways where you are actually connecting to what is important to that person at that given point in time. And through that repeated, understanding of what gets looked at, how frequently, what time, you are able to create that context for him to at least, come back more often, look at what's being offered to him, what variety, what price points. Is it for himself or herself, or is it more for other people? Is it more of the gifting kind of products that you're looking at? So I think there are various factors that kind of come together, combine, and you create that environment digitally without knowing what's happening on the other side of it. So it's like a gamble that you play every day.
Well, but for you, I imagine personally doing this work, you seem to have a very solid grasp of the emotional state of a customer, of all of your different types of customers. And that's clearly through years of putting their voice ahead of the data and your understanding of them as a priority over just looking at numbers and number crunching. So is there anything that you personally have done to kind of grow your appreciation or understanding, like any mindsets you personally have that have helped you become so customer-centric and customer-obsessed?
I think a big part of, the opportunities that came my way were in the business front. So, when we are in the business front, you are doing everything and you are striving to do everything right to help the end user get the most of it. So I think a lot of fine tuning has happened through years of working as part of different processes, different business verticals, to train the mind as to, at the end, it's the customer who that matters, and also the customer obsession mindset, and, respecting what is genuine, respecting what really comes through. And also, I've also had the opportunity to work with people across geographies. And this is with Snapdeal and even before, my work experience before Snapdeal. So I think the last 18, 19 years of, working in the business front across industries. So I've been part of FMCG, I've been part of publishing, I've been part of the retail sector, and then came Snapdeal. So a lot of that experience has given me a perspective to look at things in different ways in diverse contexts. And actually, I think that has really helped me constantly to, you know, introspect more, learn more. And over time, the learning and, you know, people insights has become a subject that I'm really passionate about.
It's like, you know, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about the design thinking process of, you know, start with empathy and then iterate and test and iterate and test. And I'm like, that's basically what you're doing in your own mind, right? Is you're learning, you're iterating on your learning, you're reflecting. I love that, that example. I have a nice picture in my mind for that. Any words of advice for somebody that doesn't have the benefit of sort of the career journey you've had, but would like to get to this place of customer obsession and this heavy lean towards emotional learning? Any advice for people who are newer in the industry, for example?
Yeah, I think consumer learning space is an ever-evolving space, and I always find it as a blank canvas. So even when we initiate new studies and, you know, new areas of investigation, we always feel that we are starting from scratch. And sure, the years of experience do add a lot of fine-tuning, and you probably know what is worth investigating deeper, what is worth. But I think you need to start from scratch with a fresh perspective and do not limit by what you know. Because we've also realized that consumers are ever evolving. What one may feel is as something that, you know, we knew a year back, the pace at which things are changing, the pace at which, you know, digital has become such a obvious part of everybody's life space. I don't think that, you know, what you learned a year back is something that you can be very happy and proud of that, you know, I've gained 3 years of experience. I think experience only gives you the ability to look at different perspectives,
yeah,
and respect both perspectives. But what you do in this space is an ever evolving thing, and you always start from scratch. So whenever whoever is starting, we all start on the same plane. It's just that the perspectives and the value for perspectives is what gets added as a bonus after you have been and seen years of work around it.
I love that. And check your confirmation bias at the door whenever you start new, and instead seek what's new and fresh and different every project you go into, right? Because take for granted that things have changed and that people evolve, yeah, because the world evolves, right?
Absolutely. And actually in our research world, what you know actually counts as biasness. So you need to be unbiased. And to be unbiased, you need to unlearn whatever you've learned.
Yeah, yeah. And start fresh. I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this talk. Is there anything that you were really hoping that I asked you that I missed or didn't bring to the surface in our talk?
No, I think we've had a wonderful conversation. Thank you for, you know, guiding along this conversation. And there's so much I often tell, you know, our colleagues and people who join us, you know, in our in Snapdeal's journey, that whenever you need time and you want to take a coffee break, just hop on to my seat, and I would love to share more anecdotes and more interesting stories and perspectives to it, because there's so much that we learn every day, and there's actually no end to what I would be able to say that, oh yes, now I have really spoken about what I had to share. But yes, it's a constant field, Karen, and I would love to keep sharing that as and when I learn more.
Well, that's wonderful. How might people connect with you? Is there, you know, an easy way for anyone to reach out if they have questions or to just kind of continue that conversation with you? Maybe it's your LinkedIn. What would you prefer?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm there on LinkedIn. My email ID also stands at rasikamathur.sg@gmail.com. So I would love to hear from like-minded professionals, from people who would like to, you know, have more conversations and deeper conversations around it. And LinkedIn is, of course, on this.
Of course, of course. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. I sincerely appreciate your time and attention today.
Thank you, Karen. My pleasure. My pleasure always to connect with you.
For sure, for sure. And to all of our listeners, that's our show today. Thank you so much for joining us on the Green Book Podcast. Many, many thanks to our producer, Natalie, and to our editor, Big Bad Audio, and of course, all of you. It's because you tune in that we find great fulfillment in our work here, bringing these conversations to you. So thank you all very much. Have a great week. Until the next time, we'll see you soon.
Green Book for the 2024 Insight Innovation Exchange. This global conference series, also known as IIEX, is where connections are made, inspiration is found, and innovative solutions are discovered. With more than 90% of attendees using IIEX insights to shape strategic business decisions, the return on investment is undeniable. Whether you're in Asia Pacific, North America, Europe, or Latin America, IIEX is your gateway to the latest market research best practices, tech innovation, and strategies for transporting insights into action. Nurture your career and business with insights from across the globe. And here's a bonus. Use the special code PODCAST to save 20% on general admission for all IIEX events. Visit greenbook.org/events today to learn more and register. See you there.